We are Sarva. The future of education starts here.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Everyday Genius. I'm your host, Pete Craig, and today it's a great pleasure to welcome someone who was a pioneer of the consciousness, the exploration of consciousness and using consciousness to create the life that you want back in the 1990s. Yeah, and was using a lot of the technology that's now being used and is more commonplace way back then. His mission is to provide or to share a solid and effective science-based framework that allows people to understand how they can use consciousness, which is quite an ethereal concept, to create their life and to create the things that they want in their lives. So please join me in welcoming Miguel Franco. Miguel, hi.
Hi, Pete. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure being here in your podcast, and I hope we can explore together and see what unfolds from our conversation.
Absolutely. So before we dive in, I just want to give a little bit of context, I guess, because I'd never heard of you before. And as we started exploring or launching this podcast, and as we started re-engaging with some of the projects that we were involved in, we started to think much more about how we can help people reconnect with their inner genius and reconnect with their wisdom. That's when, just out of the blue, you popped up and you started appearing in my social media. And as I looked into what you were doing, I think it was the headline, conscious engineering, that really caught my eye. And then when we spoke earlier last week, you told me that you'd only just started, playing around and testing with those, with that marketing. So, I actually believe that this was this meeting and you being here was meant to be. The timing was right for me, and the timing was right for you. So. I'm thankful for the synchronicities that conscious creation brings us.
Yes, synchronicity is such a beautiful, it's more than a concept for me, because it's more like a process, in a sense, that we can induce in many ways, but most of the time we're not aware of it.
Absolutely.
I think we just have to pay attention to the signs.
That's it. And the main reason I wanted to bring you on was A, to understand a little bit more about what it was that you were doing, but also I'm fascinated right now by anyone who has done study into how we tap into, whether you call it consciousness, whether you call it innate wisdom, whether you call it genius, creative genius, whatever it is that you call it. I'm fascinated by anyone who's done any study or any research on that and has insights into this, because this is one of the things that I think is missing in the world, and especially amongst the next generation. We are we're educating out of them the ability to tap into that very thing that we're born with, which is perhaps why the world's in the state it is right now. What are your I'd love your thoughts on that, Miguel.
Yeah, I think it's great that, well, in a sense that all of this current situation we are talking, while we are going through a pandemic, and also the cry for social justice and more equality among human beings. And I think what brought me out of retirement in a sense, because I feel really that in my whole lifetime, I'm 64 now, that this is really the main or the major opportunity that we have created for ourselves, in a sense, to shift into a higher level of consciousness, and people talk about higher levels being something above us or something like that. But in a sense, is a frequency that is already here. And all we need to do is to tap into it and allow that information to recondition ourselves, in a sense. So my interest, yes, it is to provide perhaps the younger generation, you know, that's coming, to have a sense-based framework and also practices and processes that are proven to work with this energy, to work with this frequency, so they can take the necessary action to carry on the transformation, because it's already going and it's been happening for a while. It's just that now we are more aware of it, or most of the population are awakening to this process. So, and my goal is to offer something that goes beyond belief systems, goes beyond creeds, you know, or beyond woo-woo and beyond all that stuff, so that people can be more neutral about that and formulate perspectives that are more loving, so you don't compete, in a sense, to own your truth. Because there are gazillions of ways to define truth and to observe truth as well.
Now, I want to collect, just take you back a little bit, because it's interesting what you said there about, you know, you wanting to create this kind of framework, this logical, call it science-based kind of framework, to make it easier for people to understand. And is your drive to do that, does that come from, because I know when we talked, you know, you had from an early age, you kind of had kind of a connection with that frequency that you're talking about, and you it was kind of misunderstood, and then you spent a lot of time kind of studying how to kind of like control that, and then became an engineer. So is this kind of like born out of, you know, that as a child, that not being understood, and that perhaps frustration with that, and helping people to then use science and use engineering in order to actually, instead of dismissing it as something that is, like we said, woo-woo, as actually something that's real, that they can harness and that they can use.
Correct. Yes, it was born out of that desire, because when you attach yourself to philosophies or woo-woo or interpretations that where the power is outside of yourself, you lose your power, basically. You know, and then we become subject to interpretations from other people, and that creates division in a lot of ways, because, you know, everybody wants to own their truth, and that's what happened with all the philosophies and major religions in the world. They didn't solve our problems. If they were here, you know, I'm not denying their beauty. I think we evolve from all of it.
Yes.
But the message, I think, needs to be upgraded or updated. Yeah. You know, it's like an app that, you know, let's download a new version here. But you needed the previous versions. You know, I think that's how evolution takes place. So that was my desire, because I could really observe the struggle of people. I mean, I couldn't believe the wars that we had and all that. That made me feel so sad, you know, and from a very early age, and discrimination and all that stuff. I mean, I grew up with what at that time was accepted normal, this racism philosophy, including that, it was very present in my day-to-day. And people just take it for granted. And I said, no, this is wrong. And I suffered a lot because of my views, especially at home, because my dad was really, you know, that macho, white, macho, you know, that kind of. But, and I challenged him and my whole family on their take on, what's normal and what's not normal.
And you were born in Brazil?
Yes, I'm originally from Brazil. I was born and raised in São Paulo, the concrete jungle. But I think there's the city itself is about 14 million people, and the Great São Paulo is over 22 million people.
Yeah.
So it's
it's
crazy.
So you talked a little bit about this idea that there's the testing that you do, and I remember it quite vividly because I made reference to Joe Dispenza and the work that he does, and looking for perhaps someone to make a comparison to in the way that you're using science. And you told me that right back in the 1990s, even quite before Dispenza really started putting his work out there, that you were using ECGs and you were using technology at that point to measure transformation within people that you were working with.
Yes, in terms of the brain waves, you mean, right? Yes. I started using biofeedback in 1993. When I published my first book in Brazil called Perceptions or Percepções, Portuguese. And that's, and in the book I had several processes to describe our perceptive mechanisms, right? So one of the things that I used at that time was a very simple EEG machine that I attached to my at that time, a portable Mac laptop, which was a big one, and in the serial port, and I start measuring the brain waves of my students. I did with myself, and then with my students, and we could observe that, like, in no time, I could bring people into theta waves. Like in 3 minutes, they were already accessing theta waves. And from there, working on comparing perceptions from when they were fully awake and when they were fully awake, fully, let's say, in beta, and also when they were in theta. And how you could stay in theta but being extremely present and awake with the information that was coming. And so it was like a deep state of relaxation, but a deep state of presence and awareness. Mm. So, and I start relating that to health and other things too, and using quantum mechanics as a way to describe some of the stuff that I was talking about.
Yeah.
My earlier inspiration was in the late 70s. I started studying with the books from Fritjof Capra, that he was a precursor of this movement. So that put me in a line of study for the science aspect of it. Mm. And I'm a mechanical engineer, so I also combine my engineering background to formulate processes to help people. So yes, that started in a major scale in 1993, major for me. Getting out of my little circle to be more present with a lot of people.
Yeah, because that led to a lot of work for you in the corporate space as well.
Yes, because somehow at that time, Brazil is much more open, I would say, to spiritual perspectives than America or any other place that I know of. And people, and somehow I think because I was an engineer and I lived in America at the time, but I was going there frequently, I had a lot of acceptance by people in corporations and organizations to learn more about the work, because people start having more of a relaxed state. So the programs that I had was more focused in quality of life at that time and how to bring that quality of life in the workplace. So that's why I was kind of invited to a lot of work, in a sense, And I was, when I published my second book, In the Age of Intuition, that was in 1996, I had a lot of acceptance into this field. And I was invited to speak at CONAR, which is the largest human resource conference in Latin America. And I was able to expose the work to, you know, a lot of
people.
Yeah, huge audience. And that created a lot of interest in the corporate, you know, for, and I don't even consider my work mindfulness. You know, I think it's mindfulness on steroids per se, you know, it's like, because it's more like reading energy, how to read vibration, not only how to achieve a state of contemplation and observation. Yeah. So that was the major difference. And yes, I did work with major global brands at that time.
And so like initially, your work was around kind of like restoring this kind of like life balance and bringing people this kind of calmness, this more centeredness, so reconnecting themselves. But it did at that same time, did you notice that when they were in those states and when they got to those places, that there was also this expansion of their creativity and their performance?
Oh yeah, definitely. And that was the reason why people wanted me, because in corporations, because it was all about, you know, increasing, of course, the well-being. But again, if you are feeling good with yourself, you are going to be more productive anyway. Mm. You are going to be more creative anyway. Yes. So when you are in a relaxed state, you start making better choices and having better ideas and all that stuff. So, and the processes that I created at that time was not like just to wait for the information, but to trigger or to activate the information and download the information so you could take action on what you were receiving in the process. And that led me to one of a kind project that I, you know, we talked a little bit about, but I'm very proud of it because it was very different. It was like being hired. I mean, as a Brazilian, we do have a passion for racing, right? Yeah. And I raced go-karts with Ayrton Senna. So I always had that passion of and knowing how he did it. I mean, from very early age, you know, the how to achieve those performance levels. And I had the opportunity to train some Formula One drivers, IndyCar drivers with my technology. And then when I shared this, I was approached by a company to create a coherent energy field in the company to bring that performance energy into the workplace. So I call it high flow performance because it is a state of high flow when you are in that process. It's not just being the zone. It's not that what I'm talking about. It's beyond being the zone because you can achieve that relaxation. But even when we drop out of it, the flow continues in another dimension. Yeah. You know what I mean? It doesn't stop. Mm. So even if you can even get depressed, but you can be in high flow.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that can get you out of it again, out of the depression, mm-hmm. to reconnect again because you created momentum. And that's an energy field that we tap in and out of the time.
Yeah.
You know.
And that I'm glad you kind of like transitioned into that because that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because you kind of like downplayed it a little bit there by saying that you worked with them, but you also actually kind of like created a project that allowed you then to fulfill a dream of competing in professionally as a driver.
Yes, and thank you. Yes, I even feel emotions now when I talk about this because it was really a dream come through. So I had this dream because I raced with no money, and you know, racing and money goes hand in hand. If you don't have it, you don't do it. And I couldn't afford at that time, you know, like just did one season of go-kart racing. And but it never left me, that desire to drive. You know, I had it so strong in myself. So when I proposed to them to create this high flow thing, I said, well, can I be the role model? I would like to be the role model of this process, because it was a year long program. So I created a structure of building a racing team where I would be the race car driver. I would handle the team and the whole process just to demonstrate what I was teaching. And there I was. I jumped into Formula Mazda, which at that time could compare to a Formula 3 car, and with no, basically no racing experience per se on a race car and all that, I competed in the West Coast here in California in the championship, and I started in the back of the field, you know, and throughout the season I progressed, and you know, the goal was to show how we can outperform ourselves when we are in coherence with the creative impulses that flow through us. So I knew how to access my race car driver, you know, potential. You know, because it never left me since I raced go-karts, and I was good at go-karts. So I brought that energy in and start showing that by being consistent, by developing that awareness of how to improve your performance by allowing that energy to flow through you, you know, one can overcome any challenge, you know. So I end up as runner-up in the championship. I was fighting until the end for the points. And I won a race, and I was like kicking butt of kids half my age. I was 40 at that time, 40 years old, when most people retire. So most drivers retire, and there I was starting, you know. So it was beautiful, and I think I could really bring that process to the company, you know, to engage with, and people engaged with me because of that, because they were seeing me walking my talk and using what I was teaching them in terms of performance enhancement and relaxation. Also, for me, driving a race car is like a meditation. You know, it's like I get into this process. I mean, I just relax with it.
Yeah.
And I didn't crash. I didn't, you know, 19 races, no crashes, nothing, you know, just performing every time better than the previous one until, you know, be able to win and run in the gearbox of the pros.
Amazing. So is this, I guess the kind of crux of this is that all of it, and you kind of touched on, you know, this idea of religion and these other kind of processes. What you're saying is all of this is within us already. We just need to access it.
Yes. And in order to do this, I think all we have to do is to develop our neutrality, or our ability to observe without judgment. Mm-hmm. And when we allow that, you know, to interpret an information without judging it, we can decide if is this for me, is not for me, is more. So I don't go into the right or wrong, is more like what's appropriate or not appropriate for any given time. Yes. So sometimes you make a choice that is appropriate, and maybe later on that same choice is not appropriate anymore.
Yeah.
So if you judge, then you feel guilty, then you feel resentful or whatever. If you don't, you just forgive yourself and move on, so you can bring a new energy in. So if you apply this concept for your everyday life, so you can live a life of observation and choice, you know, all the time. And that creates for that to happen, you know, it leads you into unconditional love, because you start loving yourself to a very high degree.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to do this. because life's changing, everything is changing, you know, and some what is appropriate is not appropriate, you know. So it's like it's crazy, you know. Developing that self-love is the gateway to, say, higher consciousness, because if you can stay with an open heart, and today, like people like Heart Mass, they show and prove that process of heart coherence, that by developing your self-love, you and it increases heart rate variability, which is creates heart coherence, and the electromagnetic fields of the heart, they really expand, creating those biofields. And it is through these biofields that we can connect with much more neutrality, say, with the quantum field. Yes. So then we start to resonate or being coherent with quantum fields that have the realities, say, that you want to experience.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So then you start receiving from the heart, and from the heart you bring into your brain. So you allow the heart really to be your guide, and to be the vehicle that is going to reprogram your brain. So basically you access your superconscious mind, which is the what I call our being, or our non-physical aspect that's coherent with the quantum field, you know, that spark of core energy, which I call core energy, the energy that powers the universe. And when you are coherent with that energy basically is the precursor of what is yet to be.
Yes.
So basically you become so intuitive about what is about to come to your life.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
That this is the driving force. And then you are become driven by the heart, basically. And the heart is passionate, is compassionate, you know, and is accepting. So it's a much more, let's say, joyful way to experience life. So, and when you are in this space, I mean, it doesn't mean that you are not going to have challenges or setbacks or anything like you do. But you see that from a completely different perspective, you know, accepting that this is part of the process, is giving you contrast to make new choices. And that's how evolution takes place, is through those experiences. And this is why we have diversity. You know, diversity is essential for our evolution. Without diversity, we don't have choices. We would be just one pattern.
Yes, yeah.
You know, because you have diversity and you have to make new choices all the time. So we start repatterning all the time. And that repatterning brings drives the evolutionary process.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how I see it.
No, that's kind of a beautiful explanation of that. I guess, yeah, this idea of kind of becoming perceptive, but in a non-judgmental way, like is the complete opposite of the way most people behave, because most people have when something comes into their field of vision, they're all automatically kind of looking for programs or looking for memories to tell them how to deal with that situation. And so it is unconsciously they're making a decision, their brain is making a decision to say whether that's right or whether that's wrong, whether it's good or whether it's bad, whether they should walk towards it or walk away from it. You know, all of those things are happening automatically. I'm guessing this is helping, or this is trying to understand and trying to unlock or unpick, you know, some of that previous programming and previous behavior. Is that what your your processes, your systems are doing, in addition to connecting with the heart, in addition to raising frequency? Is it also working on that, or do those dissolve anyway once you connect to the heart?
Well, it is Perhaps both, because basically we are interacting. Let's say we go out and do our business outside of our meditation space or whatever, right? So when you drop out of the warp speed there to get into the life of the 3D world, it's more difficult in a sense to sustain a connection with your superconscious. Mm-hmm. But when we train ourselves to start seeing life from our superconscious, you don't react as much. So you don't respond to situations or to interactions on let's say on a reactive anger with anger, resentment or whatever, you know, or judgments. You start being more calm, you know. And I think that's one thing that people always tell me is, Miguel, you're so calm. You're so, you know, but it was developed. It is like working out, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of create a process with yourself to recenter. Like today, more recently, say, I don't meditate or visualize. I don't use the term meditation much. My process is intentional visualizations, because I usually get into this trance with an intention, you know. So, and I used to practice this for at least 1 hour, 2 hours a day. And when I was teaching more live classes, I used to do this for 3 or 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
So 4 hours a day with my eyes closed, basically, you know. Today I don't do that as much, because not only I think I became more in tune with this process, but also because of the processes that I had to develop for myself, and that can lead us into a different conversation, but let's see if I can wrap this thought. Let's say using your everyday life, or design or engineering your everyday life to support that info that you downloaded. So you start seeing everything from that perspective most of the time, even if you are in beta waves all the time, you know what I mean? So you don't need to get out of it. And even if you are out of coherence, you start perceiving in a different way. So you notice, you are aware that you are not in full coherence, but also you are not desperate because you are out of coherence. Mm. You know what I mean? So you know that you can recalibrate your energy at any given time. Yeah. And for me, it takes 5 minutes. Just I close my eyes a little bit and just recenter myself. And then I get back into that space. Mm. And I had to do that, and that's another reason perhaps to explain the brain connection, that I had a near-death experience when I was 20 years old, 21, through a car accident. And I was 2 days out, you know, I lost consciousness. And I had a huge, I spent 1 year laying flat on a hospital bed without moving. And that was really, created a lot of what later manifested in my life as PTSD, and I had a depression, a whole process. And I had no idea how much this brain concussion that was so severe and was completely untreated and undetected. And that was in the 70s. Nobody would even think about that. How much it affected my prefrontal cortex. So I have still to this day difficulty in following to-do lists. So I don't operate much on a linear level. It's harder for me. So to overcome that, what you can call deficiency, so I kind of improved quite a bit the other aspect, which is to overcome that by bringing those creative impulses from the universe and allowing that to be my guide and what to do in a day-to-day basis without using too much of my, kick this box here and that one, you know, and forget about to-do lists. I'm terrible with them. And so that helped me kind of repattern my brain. And by doing this way, which in a sense, like repattern is a better way of putting.
Yeah.
Because then I don't operate much from the subconscious level. So I have to operate more from our superconscious level. So basically I have more visions that I follow than just directions.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand.
It's a different way of experiencing life.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
But if it works for a brain that was damaged, imagine for a brain that's healthy.
Mm. Yeah. You know. So this really is about helping. So the structure that you create is about helping people see that it's real, first of all, by putting it into a science kind of formula or framework. It's allowing people to see that, you know, if you do this, then this happens. Yeah, so they can't refute that fact. And then showing them processes that allow them to get into that state where do this, that happens. And then it's a case of them practicing that and becoming more in tune and more aligned with that frequency, more aligned with that that part of them, that resonance, and developing that. So they get to understand it. It's like learning a new language. You get to sense it, you get to feel it, you get to read it, if you like, and gradually start to know. It's like those, you know, I mentioned synchronicities earlier. It's about, you know, so many people have synchronicities, they're all around us, but so many people don't see them. And it's about that ability to then kind of pick up on those and actually see those not as, you know, indiscriminate events, but as, you know, a message or as something that perhaps is opening a door to another reality.
Correct, because we can say that we can use 5 intelligences in this process. So basically we use our intuitive, empathic, and somatic intelligences. We engage with them before using our pragmatic and cognitive intelligences. Mm-hmm. You know, so when we practice this more, you know, more regularly, then it's like you experience being whole and complete, because you feel really good, and then your actions will reflect your inspirations, your genius that's coming through you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's what I call the high flow performance state.
Yeah. Right.
You start high flowing with this because those 5 intelligences are coherent.
Mm.
You know, you create coherence between those intelligences. Mm. And I also use, in fact, using the process of the body, in a sense, you know, to embody. That's what people call embodiment. And some people have a very hard time to understand what embodiment really is.
Yes.
But in a sense, it's to bring that energy to... and that you can bring Bruce Lipton's processes into the, you know, the biology of belief, the biology of how this energy affects our biology, basically,
yeah.
You know, and our biochemistry and change and completely change our states. So, but it starts with the intuitive aspect, the empathy, you know, by sensing energy, emotions and feelings, and by bringing that and allowing your body to vibrate those feelings.
Yes. Yeah.
And when you have that, and then you engage with your cognition and you engage with your pragmatism to get things done.
Mm,
so it's a different way of experiencing life.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And what are I'm guessing, you know, that you've worked with people, you know, in all sorts of, you know, kind of positions. Does this work in every situation? You know, have you seen results for everyone that you've worked with, or are there some people that are just so resistant that it doesn't have an impact?
Well, I think it's like for everybody, you know, it's like you get out what you put in,
yeah.
You know, so if you don't do the work, no, it's not going to work. Mm. So I don't promise results to anyone.
Yeah.
And in fact, the results are your intentions. It's not my intentions. I give the mechanisms,
yes.
And also the framework. Not saying if you do this, you're going to make millions of dollars. No,
yeah.
It's more like follow your heart. In fact, this thing about money is very annoying in a lot of ways, because people only validate your bank account to say that your process is successful. But listen, I know, and I worked with a lot of people that had a lot of money that then they decided not to pursue that anymore.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Money became a different thing for them. And because of this process, and people who had no money making money, you know, so that's an example. So, but I wouldn't say no, not everyone engages, you know, and in fact, you know, since I started, and this is recent for me that I'm coming back, say, to the planet with online courses and things, I see that some people bought my courses and never logged in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So so how can I guarantee the success?
Yeah, I don't. Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is, that whole piece of intent and that whole piece of is so important, because people have to want it. Yeah, they've got to want to make a change. There's got to be a reason for them wanting to do it.
Yes, so. and also it's according to the time of that person. You know,
yeah.
My book was published 25 years ago, I think, and I still get letters or people find me in the internet,
yeah.
And saying, "Oh, I read your book. Just this makes so much sense now." I mean, 20 some years after the fact.
Yes, yeah.
You know, but why? Because we are constantly transforming ourselves.
Yeah.
We are changing our perspectives all the time. You know, so people do change religion. People do change political party. They do change their soccer team, favor the football team, you know, like you are constantly changing and evolving until, and the same happens to this. So some people will apply or applies those concepts and will have different perspectives and many years after the fact it can happen. So
I think something you mentioned there, and that was money. About money, and I think you're absolutely spot on there. I think money definitely quite skews people's reason for being and the intent behind what they try to do. Yeah, and often I see this all the time, and I've experienced it myself. You know, you try and force something, and it doesn't happen. Yeah, when the moment you relax and you let go of it and you surrender to whatever's happening around you. Yeah, that's the moment that things start to happen for you. And I was talking to my business partner earlier, Daniel, and we were talking about this very thing. And we were talking about a guy called Manoj Bhargava. So Manoj is a billionaire, made his money through an energy drink, and then made a pledge to he gave away most of his money, and he uses it all to support projects that solve some of the world's biggest problems. And he kind of says that without trying to make money out of those things, he believes that those are the very things that will make him make even more money. Yeah, so those things, because he's doing them, he's not chasing anything, he's doing it for love, but because they're solving such big problems, he believes that in time they will create far more wealth, not for him, because he's kind of like gifted that and anything that comes from that to continual kind of development and continual research. He believes that will make far more money than he ever could have made when he was trying to kind of like orchestrate and force things. So just that for me was extremely relevant to what you were just saying. That actually sometimes people realize that the money is not the important thing. Actually, following what they're meant to do is the important thing. And quite often, Once you go down that path and you find that thing, then you get rewarded, and you get rewarded sometimes in monetary terms. But it comes, you know, perhaps because you're not chasing it anymore.
That's correct. Again, I bring to the high flow thing, because money start high flowing towards you.
Yes.
You know, not towards you. It's like it flows through you.
Yeah.
You know, you become a conduit for it.
Yes.
And we're not going to take a penny when we leave this body.
Yeah.
You know, so why don't we flow it? You know, we can enjoy. We can, of course. And that comes the consciousness process on this. It's like this person that is flowing his money to the betterment of the planet, say, or society. And of course, you have more. Because that's exactly what he's doing. He's not taking anything with him, and he's just managing that flow.
Yes.
And it's great when we find people like him that can contribute to this. But you see, you need to have a consciousness of this process. Otherwise, you won't do it. You're going to use your money to manipulate, to control, and then we are getting back to the oligarchies that control this planet right now, you know. So and that's why I believe this work is beautiful for entrepreneurs, because once we start, when we start stopping the chase and it start flowing, our lives improve, and more things. It's like already experiencing abundance. People talk about this, right? You have to feel abundant to have the things that you want.
Yeah.
And basically that's the state. You cannot be otherwise. There is no lack when you are high flowing. Yeah. There is no lack, you know, because it's flowing. There's you can't be, you know, there's no lack. The water running through a river is the water running through a river. There's no, you know.
Yeah.
Even if you encounter resistance, the water will find a way through it.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I think, I mean, that's quite a beautiful quite sentiment to wrap things up on. I think, yeah, the idea that, there is no lack. Yeah. And that everything is within us. Yeah. We just need to become more aware and tap into what's there, accept what's there and interpret it.
Yeah, but that's the main important point, because this is the transformation of the planet. Mm. When we all get it that there is no lack, there is no need to control, there is no need to manipulate, there is no need to hoard things, you know, there's no need to create caste systems, there is no need to. So that's equality.
Yes.
Abundance equals equality.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So and basically it is a state of consciousness. It's nothing more than that. I'm not saying that people will all have the same amount of money in the bank. No. But if we all have abundance or experience that flow.
Yes.
You know what I mean? No, but no one is better than you.
Yeah. Mm, absolutely. Just before we wrap up, I'd love to ask you, you know, what words of wisdom you might want to kind of share aside from all the kind of wisdom that you've just shared with us. Yeah. If there was one thing that you had to share with someone, perhaps looking back on, things that you wish you'd known, or that you, you'd wish you'd known sooner, or you'd wish you'd tried sooner. Yeah, what would that one thing be?
Well, I think following the path of the heart is the main important thing. You know, if you to allow that wisdom of the heart to really guide you, through the process, because the heart doesn't lie to you. The brain does.
Yeah.
The heart doesn't. And I think that's the main important thing for me, that what drives my work and my whole mission is to have an open heart, to really have that unconditional love or practice unconditional love as much as we can, you know, not as a concept, but as a process even, you know. It's like going out there and okay, I'm consciously flowing this love. I'm going towards myself, which is going to raise your self-esteem and self-worth. So you are going to be more valued. You are going to value yourself so others can value yourself too.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's where what is really important, because when you do that, you don't need any validation from outside of yourself.
Mm.
You validate yourself, you validate your existence, so you become really aware and present to why you are here in this body. You know.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, an amazing like message and an amazing way to end this beautiful interview. I thank you so much for joining us and for joining us as you start to come out of your retirement and share your message again. I'm extremely honored, and it's been a pleasure to kind of have these couple of calls with you. And I'm really looking forward to kind of seeing your message continue to be shared, and your work to kind of continue to have the impact that the world needs right now.
Well, thank you so much, Peter. I mean, really, this is really like an honor to be here and to share this message. Yes, and I feel good that my hermit days are coming to an end. and this for me is a major transformation in itself, just to put myself out there. And I appreciate every opportunity and the opportunity that you are giving me to share my thoughts with your audience. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. We'll put some links for anyone who's interested in learning more about Miguel or learning more about his work. We'll put some links underneath the podcast. And I encourage you, if you feel called at all, if you feel connected to anything that Miguel said or shared, you want to know a little bit more about this this quite high flow performance matrix that Miguel's quite referenced a couple of times. Then I encourage you to quite get in touch and follow his work and see how you can get into those states too. So thank you so much for listening, everyone. Thank you again, Miguel. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
We are Sarva. The future of education starts here.